The process of getting asylum has become more difficult each and every day.
Asylum in America is supposed to be a protection for people escaping danger in their home country. Adafe Okporo from Nigeria is one of them. This is The Takeaway. I'm Todd Zwillick. Stories of refugees have dominated the headlines over the last year, but we hear a lot less about asylum seekers and the many difficulties they face. Applying for asylum is much different than applying for refugee status in America. Kavita Sarana is a senior reporting fellow at ProPublica, and she explains.
There are different legal terms for people who are essentially facing the same thing. They're both people who are trying to escape some kind of violence or persecution in their home country. Refugees is the term for people who've been vetted by the United Nations, usually in a refugee camp abroad, and then they're brought to a country willing to accept them, like the United States or Canada, in a resettlement program. Asylum seekers is the term for people who enter a country and then request to stay on the ground. So a lot of times it's people who feel like they have to get out as fast as possible. For example, in Central America, there's not refugee camps the way there are around the Middle East near Syria, where Syrians have been able to go. So if you're a Central American and you need to escape, you would go towards the United States and try to request asylum there.
And that's just what Adafe Okporo did. He was an AIDS activist in his home country of Nigeria and was part of the LGBTQ community there. On October 28, 2016, just weeks before the election of President Donald Trump, Adafe landed at Terminal 4 at JFK Airport in New York and officially sought asylum.
In 2016, I was living in Nigeria. I was attacked by homophobic community members in my community who felt like I was advocating against their religious views and beliefs. I flew to Cairo. I was staying in Cairo. Then I decided to come to the U.S. because I had a U.S. visa and I know that United States provide protection for asylum seekers. When I came to JFK, I went to Terminal 4, picked up my bag, but I don't have anywhere to go. I've never been to the U.S. before. I don't have friends or family in the U.S. I went to the immigration officer and told the immigration officer, I'm coming from Nigeria, and he asked me to wait for an interview. So he told me that I was going to do a credible fear interview to determine if I would see a judge or if I would be returned back to Nigeria. Asking you questions that will nail you down and lead to you being deported is like their goal. I was taken to a cell. I was kept in the cell in JFK for about 4 hours. They brought me out, put me in chains, threw me in a bus. And the next thing I saw was the detention center. We came in very late in the night. When it dawned on me that I was in a jail-like setting was the next morning after I showered. They gave me a jumpsuit and they took away the clothes I brought. So then I realized that I was going to be having a new home for an unknown period of time.
About 180,000 people applied for asylum in 2016, and the vast majority of them, like Adafe, are detained. Just 4% get parole, meaning they're allowed to live freely while they wait for a decision from the government. But it wasn't always this way. Back in 2011 and 2012, almost everyone who claimed asylum was granted parole. Recently, ProPublica and WNYC teamed up to look at asylum in America. ProPublica's Kavita Sarana explains that over the past few decades, the system designed to make it easier for people seeking safety in the U.S. has instead become backlogged and complicated.
World War II really sparked our current asylum and refugee policy. During the war, a lot of safer countries like the United States largely shut their doors to Jewish refugees. They said it was a national security threat. So after the war, the international community attempted to create a more orderly system to aid people in danger.
Well, Kavita, there's certainly been a lot of reporting around the asylum system. What's the current state of the asylum immigration system in the United States under the Trump administration right now?
I think what we've seen with this administration is an effort to reframe the asylum system as a national security threat, a program that invites loopholes, that is in some way a magnet for people who want to come here illegally instead of just a humanitarian program. There's a really large backlog of asylum cases in immigration court. I think it stands at about 680,000 now, and it takes years to process these. That problem predates the Trump administration, but what we've seen under the Trump administration is a couple things. One is an effort to speed up immigration court hearings and deportations. Another is an effort to detain people while they're waiting for their hearings. The administration says this is because so many people miss their hearings, but advocates and lawyers say that this is also an effort to deter asylum seekers, to make it so difficult to wait and apply for asylum that people will give up. Another thing we've seen is also just an effort to narrow the definition of one category of refugee status called particular social group. This has always been the kind of broadest category that someone could apply for asylum under. And it seems that there's an effort to narrow that even further so that it wouldn't apply to people who are fleeing gang violence from Central America or domestic violence or gender-based violence.
If you're applying today, if you come to the border claiming asylum status, what are you saying to the U.S. government, and how long are you likely to wait until your claim gets processed?
If you come to the border, you have to express a credible fear. You go through what's called a credible fear interview with a U.S. asylum officer, and they'll ask you some basic questions about what you're afraid of. And it's supposed to be a low bar because that is not your full asylum interview. It is just a, are you afraid of something in your home country? Yes, okay, kind of interview. So if you pass the credible fear interview, then there's some exceptions to this. But right now under the Trump administration, you're most likely held in detention until your case comes up in court. It can be from months to years.
So the Trump administration, as you mentioned, Kavita, says that the asylum system is basically rife with abuse, a loophole way to get into the United States. Is there any evidence that people do, in fact, abuse the system as a way to gain entry?
Like any complicated system, the asylum system does have some loopholes, but we don't have hard numbers on how often it happens. And for most people who work in this system on a daily basis, from former ICE prosecutors to former Border Patrol agents, they all said that most people who apply for asylum do so in good faith and believe that they are fleeing danger, even if they don't fit particularly into the asylum laws.
Now, a lot of immigration advocates, you say, are looking to reform this system. How do they want it reformed? And is that likely to happen with the Trump administration basically going in the opposite direction here?
It's very unlikely to happen. I asked a lot of people who've worked in the system for years or decades what they'd like to see changed. And what came up over and over again was, for example, legal representation. Asylum seekers do have the right to seek legal representation, but they don't have the right to a lawyer. A lot of experts said that providing more access to legal counsel would greatly improve the quality of cases, make sure that people who are facing life or death cases in immigration court do receive due process. And studies have also shown that asylum seekers who are working with a lawyer are much more likely to show up for their court date, so it would also cut down on people who apply for asylum but end up not showing up.
Kavita Sarana, Senior Reporting Fellow at ProPublica, thanks so much.
Thank you.
So let's go back to Adafe Okporo now. After arriving at JFK from his home, Nigeria, he was put in the Elizabeth Detention Center. It's a privately run facility in New Jersey. Unlike most asylum seekers, Adafe was able to get a lawyer a few weeks into his detention, but he was still denied parole under the Trump administration's more stringent rules. Adafe ended up staying in that detention center for 6 months.
It is very difficult to get asylum. First of all, getting to the U.S. border is very, very difficult. And when you get to the U.S. border, the border patrol officers try to cajole you to sign for your deportation. The process of getting asylum has become more difficult each and every day because they require you to prove that you have a past persecution, you have a present persecution, and you have a future persecution. How can you prove that you are gay before a court of law? It's like making you feel psychologically as if you are crazy. Coming to the U.S. and being re-traumatized by having to narrate all these things at every single process you are faced before an immigration person is just ridiculous for you to prove that you are going through persecution. And now the reasons why people flee from their country is increasing every single day. Who loves to leave his country for any reason? Me, for as a person, I don't like to leave Nigeria. I grew up speaking a language, the kind of food I like to eat. I lost all these things to come to America. I was just looking for safety. Staying in a detention center is very tough because everybody who stays in the detention center are depressed. They have anxiety. The detention center is just like a cage. I feel like the detention center is created in such a way now that demoralizes people and make them feel like signing their deportation to go back to their country. But I feel very privileged that I was able to get an immigration attorney because the government does not provide attorneys for asylum seekers because we are not yet U.S. citizens. And I won my case because of articles I have online about me that show the work I do. And I have a representative who stood as a witness for me from USAID. That same day I won my case, I was released that same day, but I was released 10 p.m. in the night. There is nothing like a procedure for someone who was caught in New York and is released in New Jersey that says there's a train station here, or you can make a free phone call for your family member or somebody to come and pick you. They just open the door and say, go. At 10 p.m. in the night, I came from West Africa. We always wear warm clothes, and it's spring. It's still cold for me. To release me at that period of time and say, just walk away, they could have done better. But I'm glad that I was connected to First Friend, a nonprofit who supports people who are detained, to send somebody to come and pick me up that night and take me to a shelter. I would have been homeless. I would have been walking on the streets, displaced. So it's like from one form of trauma to another form of trauma, and we can't continue to remain silent. I worked in the detention center 4 hours every day for $1. I had to do it because I came without money, and I had to communicate with people so I could get documents in the detention center to my lawyers. So for me, if I would advise for a better and just immigration system, countries like Canada, they practice this immigration system. They are housing shelters. So you come and report to immigration. It's better than keeping people in a detention center, because keeping people in detention center affects their mental ability to like reintegrate into the society. It's like someone who has been into a jail and come out from jail. You can either be positive or negative, but you're likely to be negative because of the way you are treated. The system is not as glorious as is seen in the movies.
Adafe is 28 years old now. He's been living legally in the United States as an asylee for just over a year, since April of 2017. He's now a volunteer with First Friends of New Jersey and New York, the very same organization that helped him out of immigration detention. But what happens once asylum is granted? Adafe Okporo described being released from detention at night into a strange place where he'd never been before. WNYC reporter Matt Katz learned that in that way, Adafe's story is not unusual.
You're granted asylum, but you're then just released. And I've spoken to many detainees, particularly in the New Jersey area, former detainees, and they say they're released at night. They're not given a list of social service agencies. They're not even given a list of homeless shelters, because often they have no money at all. So they're left to kind of wander the streets at times looking for a place to even stay.
You said people are released at night. Does that mean that once asylum is granted, somebody might slide a cell door open or open a door at an ICE office and say, okay, out you go, and you just go out onto the sidewalk and that's it?
Yeah, that's exactly the way people describe it. I mean, ICE, Immigration and Customs Enforcement, which is in charge of detaining people, says if somebody is released from detention, including these new asylees, there are arrangements made with their families, sponsors, or lawyers. But sometimes they don't have any of those things. Sometimes they don't speak English or even Spanish, and they know nobody. So they are kind of left off on their own. I've heard cases of people walking six, 7 miles to find a homeless shelter. I heard about a woman who tried to go back into the detention center in order to sleep because she didn't know where else to go. Now, in the Elizabeth Detention Center, which is a privately run facility in New Jersey, there's a nonprofit organization called First Friends, and they have posted flyers in the detention center with their phone number so people can then call them to make arrangements about a place to go. And this group has actually started a home where they will come and pick up asylees and take them to a place called the Lighthouse. I spoke to a woman. Her name is Jill Singleton. She's a church deacon in New Jersey. And she was visiting detainees at the Elizabeth Detention Center. And this is how she got the idea to create the Lighthouse.
I met a man by the name of Peter, and Peter told me that he was being released that evening. And I asked him where he was going to go, and he said he had no idea. And it just absolutely haunted me to think that he had gone through everything that he went through, was put in detention, finally got out, and on the day he was getting out, he had no idea where he was going to go, and he didn't know another living soul in the United States.
Matt, what do people like Peter say about the feeling they get or the disorientation they feel at this moment when they're granted asylum, maybe safe from persecution at home, but then turned loose on their own in a strange place?
It's so disorienting. I met an Ethiopian man. His name is Mesfen Wanmagegnu. He wrote an article against the Ethiopian government, which prompted the government or some allies of the government to shoot him. He was shot. He was injured. He ended up escaping to one African country, then a second African country, at which point he was able to fly to Brazil. And he made his way all the way from Brazil, all the way up through Central America to the Texas border, at which point he declared asylum. He was detained and shipped to New Jersey, where he spent 6 months. And he didn't know then what to do, but he was finally granted asylum. He called this group, First Friends of New York and New Jersey. They have this facility, the Lighthouse in Jersey City, that's been open for about a year now. And that houses asylees, new asylees. And he just extolled the virtues of this organization and this house to me. He said otherwise he would have had no place to go.
How do you live it without first friends? If you don't have family, if you don't have a friend, how do you live? So difficult.
Matt, I'm appreciative of Mesfin's thoughts there and his feelings of isolation if he was turned out by himself. But this is more than just people's feelings of disorientation. I mean, people who are granted asylum and then are left with nowhere else to go or people on the margins. I mean, they might be at real risk.
You know, absolutely. And, you know, there are resources available to them. They are allowed to access welfare. There's small cash payments that they can get for 8 months, but they don't know that these resources are even available to them. I mean, these people have this long journey, and then they literally could end up on the streets.
Matt, what has ICE said about this or other immigration authorities who could improve services for people who are granted asylum?
ICE says that they follow proper procedures and that those detainees are released to their lawyers or to their sponsors or to relatives. They did not address specific complaints about why, at least at facilities in New Jersey, they're released at night when it makes it harder for them to navigate public transportation to get wherever they might go. And also, you know, ICE contracts out a lot of their detention. So finding who's responsible for this can be somewhat difficult.
Now, is anybody talking in a concrete way about maybe just basic information for people who are granted asylum? Hey, you've won your case. Here's where you can go. Here's where you can eat. Here's who you can call.
ICE's official policy says they're supposed to have that written information given to every detainee who is released. They're even supposed to provide winter jackets. I mean, often people are coming from warm climates. They spend 6 months in detention. They end up outside and it's the middle of the winter and they have flip-flops and a windbreaker on. It seems to me it's a matter of ICE following its policy and making sure its contractors are following its policy. And otherwise, it's left up to these nonprofit organizations that have sprung up around the country to help immigrants. And that includes asylees, refugees, and all of these kinds of people. This lighthouse that I visited in Jersey City for recently released asylum seekers, just a small nonprofit and some religious organizations. I went there on the one-year birthday party of the lighthouse. And in that 1 year, the lighthouse had already housed people from 42 different countries. They have on their mantelpiece all the different flags from all the countries. And in that, you see the best of America. You see these volunteers who are just looking to welcome new and would-be Americans. While the government may fail at its job sometimes, there have been other people all over the country who are willing to fill in the gap here and help out these asylum seekers.
Matt Katz, WNYC. Matt, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Todd.
You can find a link to WNYC and ProPublica's multimedia reporting project about asylum in the United States on our website at thetakeaway.org, and they even have an interactive game that puts you in the shoes of an asylum seeker in the United States. Check it out.
I'm David Remnick, host of the New Yorker Radio Hour. There's nothing like finding a story you can really sink into that lets you tune out the noise and focus on what matters. In print or here on the podcast, The New Yorker brings you thoughtfulness and depth and even humor that you can't find anywhere else. So please join me every week for The New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.